7366, penradio@gmail.com, penradio.com. I'm in New York for the last day. I fly back to Vegas tonight. Tonight I'll be flying the big airplane back to Las Vegas and get back home. I'll be on the airplane when my big game show, Identity, airs tonight. It'll be coming on at 9 o'clock tonight, right after Howie's show, right after Deal or No Deal. There'll be an hour of my game show, and then it'll go to 8 to 9, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I was on the Today Show this morning. This morning they had me, I was up at like, Jesus Christ, like at 7 a.m. or 6 a.m. I think I was up. And I had to go over there and I had to go and go through the crowd and collect toys for tots. They line you up there and they have this Santa hat. I would not wear the Santa hat. You know, they want to, oh, you'll be the biggest elf we've had. You know, that's the kind of, you know, you work 30 years of your life for some of the Today Show to tell you, oh, you'll be the biggest elf. But it was great because Toys for Tots, you know, people bring their presents and they go to children. Of course, I get first pick. So I picked out a couple good things for Moxie and Z, and my Christmas shopping is done. Just digging into the bag there. And I was interviewed by all four of them. I walked over, and it was a five-minute interview, and all four of them were asking questions, all lined up there about Identity. Because, you know, Identity's on NBC, so that they can get the Today Show to do that. And you're up so early in the morning, and there are hundreds of people in Rockefeller Center all holding up signs that say, you know, Des Moines loves the Today Show. So that's what it's like to be on there. And I only missed Hillary Clinton by like 15 minutes. Hillary Clinton, the two guests, if you looked at the TV guy for the Today Show, it said Hillary Clinton and Penn Jillette, which is what the Republicans would most like to see run for president. That's the double bill they'd like. That's the ticket. If we could just get Hillary Clinton and Penn Jillette, I'm sure we could win again, even with Bush. We could even run Bush again and win. We just get that. But I didn't get a chance to talk to Hillary Clinton. We didn't get a chance to chat. And it's a shame because we have so little in common, almost nothing in common with Hillary Clinton, except that if she runs for president, I have this really strong thing about voting that I will not vote for the lesser of two evils. I'll only vote for someone I think is really good. And I really do not like Hillary Clinton, but I think if she runs for president and it comes down to the wire, I might actually vote for her. Not because I want Hillary Clinton to be president, but because I so badly want a woman to be president. And I'm afraid that a lot of people be thinking that. And if we just get, just once, you know, just for the history of the United States of America to be able to say we had a woman president in the early 21st century. We should have certainly had one the end of the 20th century. We didn't make it. So we probably should do that. And if she, you know, if she runs with Obama, that would be great. We have an African-American, you know, vice president or president, and that would be really good. But so I think we should, I think that I might actually, even with my libertarian leanings, go that way. 866-570-PEN, 7366 is the phone number. I'll take calls on most anything because I just haven't been taking calls on the air much and I miss it. So penradio@gmail.com if you want to write me a Gmail, penradio.com. And I think I'm going to talk, probably I'll talk more tomorrow about Identity after some of you have seen it. Today I was really interested by this article in the Daily Mail because, you know, now that we're reading the internet, we don't care where newspapers are from. And they do this thing where they interview children. I don't know if a lot of the radio shows have talked about this, but they interviewed children under 10 years old, I believe, children under 10, and asked them, what's the best thing in the world? That was the question. What's the best thing in the world? They're asking, and they asked about 1,500 youngsters in England, and there's this big thing about this. They rank God number 10. And I guess people are heartbroken by that because the best thing in the world is supposed to be God. Although God transcends the world and is not of the world, and maybe these kids are very theologically sophisticated and didn't think he was in the running. But they actually, of this world, which God is, of course, above this world, but of this world, they said the very best thing was being a celebrity. The very best thing in the world to 10-year-olds is being a celebrity. And second was good looks. And third was being rich.
They're right.
I mean, they're right. Yeah. And then on the list, and then God comes in at 10. So you'd be a celebrity. And then the worst things they had, Killing and wars were the worst things. Kind of slightly redundant, but that's okay. Followed by drunks, bullies, illness, smoking, stealing, divorce, and being fat. 10th place was dying. So 10th place for good is God. 10th place for dying is death. I mean, 10th place for bad is death. And when they were asked what rules they would make if they were king or queen of the world, the number one response from the under 10 set was to ban knives and guns. So they want to ban all knives and guns, which means either I'm more sophisticated than a 10-year-old, because I think the banning knives and guns is a bad idea. But if they were king and queen of the world, they would also put a stop to fighting and killing, telling lies, drugs, bullying, drunks, and smoking. And I've got to think that smoking is only on the list because of the extensive propaganda that they do, the anti-smoking thing. And it's one of the things that that troubled me. Now, you can call that. I want to see what people think that if you're 10 years old, what should be the best and the worst thing in the world. 866-570-PEN. That's 7366 if you don't have letters on your phone. 866-570-PEN or penradio@gmail.com. And our web address is penradio.com. Call in and let us know what you think kids should say is the best thing in the world, and what they should say is the worst thing in the world. You know, I've had this argument a lot with people, because one of the things they did to the cigarette companies in this country was they said that they had to educate youngsters about the danger of smoking. And a poll that I saw, and I can't remember where this is, but people are going to call me on this, and it's going to be really embarrassing, because I'm not going to know where I saw it, so maybe I'm going to have to act like I made it up, but there was a poll that said kids now, in this country at least, believe that cigarette smoking is more dangerous than it really is. They've actually gone the other way, and they now think that it's more dangerous than it is. And if the tobacco company is really in charge of education, and if education is supposed to mean accurate information and not propaganda, then they have to start spending a lot of money telling kids in school that cigarette smoking is just a little safer than they thought. Right. Not really safe, but just a little safer. Because if your education has to include accuracy, otherwise it's just propaganda. And I think that part of what makes cigarette smoking sexy is the fact that it's dangerous.
Yeah.
So I think that they're just, you smoke, don't you?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, you smoke cigarettes?
Cigarettes.
About how much?
About a pack a day.
About a pack a day. So how many years have you been doing that?
I forget. I think we'll have to say 15.
15 years. So you've got 15 good solid pack years.
Pretty much.
And how dangerous do you think it is?
Not at all.
Not at all. Okay. If it were dangerous, it'd be something on the package.
Yeah,
something.
I can still go up the stairs. So.
Sure, you can still do that. So I have a very special guest on the line who did my game show Identity. And we have Eve Plum. But I have a huge echo here, guys. Can you fix that when Eve comes on? Hello, Eve.
Hello.
How are you? I'm having a bad echo.
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. So did you like doing the game show Identity?
It was so much fun. And, you know, I'm really interested to see the show this week, because I only got to see my one little slice.
Yeah, I know. I didn't get to talk to you at all, because there's all these, you know, the legality of it is amazing. Because
yes.
If I were to talk to
That's
you for even
I
a
figured.
Moment, I'd give something away.
That's
but,
what I figured.
But for me, and I'm going to give this away, and probably NBC hates me for this, but your identity, everybody knows you were on the Brady Bunch, and your identity
right.
was artist. And
yes.
I know you. I'm 51 years old, which I think puts me at the exact wrong age for the Brady Bunch.
Definitely.
I never saw one episode.
Right.
Never one.
Yes, people forget that it was when it was on the air, it was uncool to watch.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, don't you remember? I mean, when it was on the air, you wouldn't have watched it, right?
No,
it
I didn't.
It wasn't cool.
I didn't watch it once. And how many?
Because you were... I was on it for 5 years. It was on for 5 years. Nobody would cop to watching it. We got a lousy review on the TV guide for the pilot,
mm-hmm.
and so it's only later that everybody's got this halo effect about the show. And, well, what did you think as Jen Brady when you were invincing this role that is a cultural icon? I'm like, I showed up at work and knew my lines, you know.
And how old were you when you started?
I was 10, but I already had 4 years of acting under my belt on things like The Big Valley and It Takes a Thief. And
you were in It Takes a Thief?
Yes.
Now that's cool.
Now you know It Takes a Thief. You're the first person I've talked to that really knows that show. Yes, I was the daughter of a professor who was being held behind I was kidnapped and kept behind the Iron Curtain. He was escaping.
That's really sexy. That'd be exciting.
It was very sexy. But it wasn't that sexy. I was like 8. Okay.
Okay. So yeah, you can't consider
it
that.
But even at 8 years old, I was very thrilled to be working with Robert Wagner and have him save me from the bad guys. You know.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I mean, that's what kids are playing, that kidnap stuff and all that stuff at that age. It must have been nuts to have your play actually be acted out by adults. You know.
Yeah. Definitely. I was in a lot of disaster things. I was had fallen down a well in Big Valley. I was an orphan where the orphanage burned down in another Big Valley. I was kidnapped. I was run down by a horse on the Virginian. So
you had victims stamped across your forehead.
I guess so. I was a cute little blonde kid, so, you know, you put her in peril and you got an interesting story.
Now, was that all, I know this is a stupid question, but maybe you can answer it smarter than it is. Was that all your choice? I mean, how do you become a kid actor? Did you want to act or what?
I know that there are kids who do. With me, a children's agent moved in next door to us when I was 6 years old. I talked my mom into taking me on a commercial audition, and I got the job. And I kept getting work. And my folks never pressured me to do it, really, you know. And I wasn't. It just sort of kept happening, and I kept being good at it. And so I kept doing it.
And so you spent all these. Lou Reed has a song called "Growing Up in Public," but you really were doing that, right?
Definitely. Yes. Yep, sure did. But my parents were very good about, because they had been performers themselves, about making sure that I had private time, that I had time with other children, other things, that I didn't have to go do every publicity thing. No was an answer, which I have learned very well to be able to say no, because they will take you for all you will give.
Yeah, well, you know, I've noticed that myself now and again.
Yes.
But when you were on Identity, the identity we had for you was Painter, which I don't even know exactly how I came about this, but I do follow art a little, so I thought that was much too simple because I'd been to your website, and I was surprised when I went back to your website that you weren't trained in art at all, right?
Right, yes. My parents, you know, exposed me to art. I was aware of art, and I'd always drawn and painted, but again, that was something that I just kept at and kept doing till I got better and better at it, and I liked it in my own mind. Mm-hmm. And I liked what I was doing well enough to show it to other people.
But I was surprised.
And so I just keep making mistakes until I get it how I think it's right.
But I was surprised that a lot of the stuff you're doing is it's not photorealism, but it's realistic enough that it would seem like there was a lot of study of, you know, perspective and all that kind of stuff. But you just figure that out yourself.
A little bit of both. I mean, you know, I certainly read books.
Uh-huh.
I've read books and I've looked at paintings and I've tried to figure out learn how other painters do it. And that's always the frustrating thing is that whenever they talk about art, they never say, and Rockwell used cadmium red to this effect, or he always toned his canvases with XYZ. So I'm always interested in the techniques because that's, and as a matter of fact, I've been experimenting with some different techniques and mediums lately and it's amazing the different effects you get.
And how long do you paint a day?
I try to paint. I end up painting like 3 days a week, 4 to 6 hours a day.
Wow.
And then the rest of life has to take over during that. And in that, that's like you paint for an hour and then you walk away, and then you paint for 15 minutes and then you walk away. And then sometimes you just run out of whatever it is that works and you have to stop completely because you'll just wreck it.
You know, I've never had any sort of visual talent whatsoever. I mean, none. I can barely write. I mean, I can't read my own writing. I have to type. But, you know, I went to, you know, Martin Mull, of course.
Oh, sure, yes.
And I was...
Kitty and I did a Wonder Woman together.
So,
he's great. He's a lot of fun.
He's terrific. And Martin Mull is one of the very few people that is accomplished as an artist and as a comedian and as a guitar player. He really is all three all the way. And I've got a couple of Martin's paintings, and considers himself first a painter, first and foremost a painter.
Really?
And the other two, you know, he was Rhode Island School of Design, and actually his career started as a painter, and the comedy thing and the guitar thing came as a sideline later, and it just happened he got more famous there, and now is retreating a little bit more back into his paining. But I thought your stuff was great. And you still consider yourself, you still go out on auditions and still talk to people about acting? Yeah.
And of course, but it's there's much more control over the painting, in that I can do it whenever I want, and I can be self-starting about making it any kind of a business. Whereas when you're an actor, you sort of have to present yourself and be chosen.
Well,
it's more difficult.
You know,
to be chosen as an actor.
I've never aspired to be, and never tried to be an actor. And my friends that are actors, it just seems. You know, most people in their life will be rejected professionally maybe four or five times in their life. Maybe they apply to a college they don't get into.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they apply for two or three jobs they don't get. And your best actors are rejected completely six or seven times a week. And that's you're good. Because otherwise you're not going out on auditions, you don't get to be rejected that much. I just don't know how people keep any sort of self-respect or any sort of dignity when you're rejected all that much. I'm always so in awe of friends of mine that, you know, will go for 2 years before getting a part and then still be able to pull themselves together. I couldn't take that much. And that's why, as a kid, of course, once you're on the Brady Bunch, you were set for 5 years. But it just seems like explaining to a kid that, you know, you didn't get that because they're looking for a brunette would be just heartbreaking.
Yeah, I was first. Now, as a kid, in that I got most everything. I can remember once not getting something and being crying on my mom's lap, being like, well, but they don't want me. They always want me. What is this? You know, and then it wasn't until, because I was fortunate after Brady Bunch to keep working in Dawn Portrait of a Teenage Runaway and lots of TV movies and stuff. It wasn't until later on past that it was really all about the rejection of, what did I do wrong? I've always thought that, you know, if acting were a man, I would have left him by the side of the road years ago, the way it treats me.
And it must have been hard.
You know, but what's funny is, with art, I don't care if somebody doesn't like it. Absolutely. Doesn't bother me. Great, because there are a lot of paintings I don't like. But I've never been able to get over the person thing with the acting. If they don't want me, it still feels, it's still like, I could have done something different. I should have had bigger boobs, or, I don't know, been taller. You know,
that's really true. And the people that I know that work in more popular forms of art and then also do stuff that's real experimental, they never care if you hate the real art, the real deep stuff from their heart. They care if you dislike the popular stuff, because that's where they're trying to be liked. You know, it's a more I guess acting is much more external in that whole thing. But thank you so much for doing Identity. What was it like to be, because, you know, I'm not allowed to have anything to do with the backstage aspect there. What was that whole scene, being backstage with all those wacky people?
It was crazy. I mean, they notarized me to say that I was not a bull rider or a brain surgeon or a skydiver or whatever they were. And they showed me the pictures of the contestants to make sure I didn't know them. It was a lot of hanging out, drinking some coffee, having some Cheetos, you know. The set was interesting in that I had a little depth perception problem, because the way the podium was that I was standing on, I couldn't see. It was like then there was a 4 foot drop into blackness and then another pit, and I couldn't see my feet. Oh, I was having a little bit of a depth perception.
You know, that's me, because I love more than anything to see people fall. So I insisted on that. That's
You almost got me. You almost got me. Well, I almost went ass over tea kettle.
It was a pleasure talking to you, and I was so thrilled to meet you on the show. And say the name of your website, because the art's really good, and they should go there and forget about the whole Brady Bunch jive. Give the actual URL.
It's eveplum.tv.
couldn't be easier than that. Thanks a lot, Eve.
We're going to say goodbye,
and I'm also going to take a break, and I'll be back after this. This is Penn Jillette on CBS Free FM. This is Penn Jillette here on the Free FM, 866-570-PENN, 7366, pennradio@gmail.com, pennradio.com. I was talking about the children saying that the best thing in the world, what the best thing in the world, this study I saw, I don't know who did it, I guess it was at the, it's in the Daily Mail today, it was on Drudge is where I found it. I try to pretend that, you know, I was reading through the Daily Mail, actually it's on Drudge, and they did... they asked a bunch of kids, like 1,500 kids, under 10 years old, what was the very best thing in the world, and 10th on the list was God, and top of the list was being a celebrity, second was good looks, third was being rich, and they also asked them the worst things, which was killing, and then for the most famous people, they did... God was way up on the list. God comes in as the 10th most famous person in the world. Jesus is at number 4. Father Christmas is at 5. But also in the top 10 were Madonna, the Queen, Tony Blair, and Simon Cowell, and Sharon Osbourne. So those are the people that are the most famous in the world. And I just thought that it was interesting. Here are the top 10. 1, being a celebrity. 2, good looks. 3, being rich. 4, being healthy. 5, pop music. 6, families. 7, friends. 8, nice food. 9, watching films. And 10 is God. I think those priorities are pretty okay. I'm okay with that. But what do you guys think? 866-570-PEN. That's 7366. PennRadio@gmail.com. PennRadio.com. And let's take a phone call from Peter. What's up, Peter?
Hey, I'll tell you the number one thing that children like.
What's that?
Dirt.
I mean, just rolling around in dirt?
Rolling around in it, adding water to it, and doing something I call inverted bathing.
Do you have kids?
No.
No, you don't at all? But you remember back when you were a kid on what you liked, dirt?
Yes, oh yes, I was one to enjoy the dirt, I will say that.
And how do you feel about the list that's in the Daily Mail with the number one being a celebrity and being rich and number 10 being God?
Well, I'd say that's probably good.
Okay.
But you want, I'd say God's not really that important in our world today, you know?
You want dirt to be up much higher though, right?
I think dirt is much higher than God. God, according to God, we came from dirt.
Okay.
And from dirt, we will return.
So
am I correct?
Number one, you would say dirt, and then 2, being a celebrity.
Being a celebrity, for a 10-year-old, I'd say being a celebrity should probably be number 9.
Number 9. And then what would be
above God?
What would be after dirt?
Yeah.
Right after dirt? God.
Like, I think health, that should be a little higher. I'm surprised at how low health is.
I don't think kids think about health. You know, when I was a kid, you get really sick, but you don't think that's a bad thing. You have like 104 fever, you vomit, and then it's over. It's no big deal, you know. Getting sick.
You go back to school and you brag about it.
Yeah.
Guess how sick I was. Real sick.
I didn't even mind being sick like in my 20s. You know, in my 20s, I kind of liked being sick. It was kind of fun to walk around. I walked around in New York City in the middle of the winter with a leather jacket with a T-shirt under it and the jacket unzipped and jeans and sneakers and no socks, you know, holes in the knees. And I was freezing cold all the time. I remember once talking to Joey Ramone, and we were outside. We were in Philadelphia, and we were outside on the loading dock. And we were both standing there in leather jackets opened up with T-shirts, jeans and sneakers with no socks, and it was freezing cold, and Joey was sniffling and going, you know, a lot of people think we're like on drugs because we're like sniffing all the time and coughing, but really if you wear a leather jacket year round, you're sick all the time. You're too hot in the summer, too cold in the winter. So I was sick from the time I was about 20 to the time I was about 24, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I like, you know, hawking up lungers and spitting. That was real punk. I just dug it. So I don't think being sick, I mean, to a 10-year-old kid, unless, you know, you're a 10-year-old kid who's sick and, you know, like really has a serious health problem, as opposed to
yeah,
just,
like
you know.
Cancer.
Yeah, sure. Like, you know, you're on a billboard or something. But,
I've got leukemia.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be a whole different thing. That's a bad thing. But
cold, on the other hand.
Yeah, cold, I think it's a cool thing. And I think that from the time you're 19 to the time you're 35, you should never get a full night's sleep, and you should never get rid of a cold. I think it should be part of what you are. Just kind of sniffle your way and punk your way through and blow your nose into your hair. I think it's a really important thing to do. The wind's behind you, you know, that kind of thing. I didn't even think about
You should be blowing your nose in other people's hair.
Okay, well, that's a whole different level. I believe that was the hippie thing. I was more a punk, which is blowing your nose in your own hair. But thanks a lot, Peter. Man.
Hey, I got a website. Can I?
Sure. What the hell? What is it?
Hey, yeah. It's PeterCoffin.com.
Oh, Peter Coffin.
Yes,
Why do I know your name? Why do I know your name?
I've been on TV before.
Yeah, there you go. Peter Coffin?
Yeah, PeterCoffin.com. I can kick myself in the testicles.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. That's why you'd be on TV. And how often do you do it?
That?
I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the your site right now. It's got a cat on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time that cat video plays, I get paid money. So I put that on the front of my site because I'm a greedy bastard.
Oh, there you go. There you go. But now, Peter Coffin is a name. Is that your real name?
Yes, that is actually my real name.
Because isn't it also a very important name in Moby Dick?
Yes, in Moby Dick.
Yeah.
He's the innkeeper, I believe.
Yes, he is, and a very important character, and the character that that really does bring all of them together. Did you did your parents name you Peter because of Peter Coffin and Moby Dick?
No, they named them because of my grandfather, who was named Peter Matthias Coffin, which is unfortunately my name, too.
Matthias?
Yes, Matthias. Biblical.
Oh, yeah, well, there you go. But did you, you've read Moby Dick, right?
Yes, I've read Moby Dick.
The sad thing about Moby Dick is there's no character named Penn Jillette.
I know.
If there was a character named
Penn. That's a big problem.
If there was
a
character.
That's the main flaw.
Well, the only flaw, I would say, in Moby Dick.
Yeah, the only flaw.
I think Queequeg could have been called Penn Jillette. It would have done no harm whatsoever. I would have liked to have been the savage. You know, there's a.
Oh, I'm all about that.
There's a point in Moby Dick where it's a great section in the early part where they talk about Queequeg, where they talk about him as the harpooner formerly known as Prince, because he was a prince of the island he's from. Check that out in Moby Dick.
Queequeg is how you pronounce that bizarre symbol.
Yes, exactly, Queequeg. But he does say that he was formerly, I think it says, the harpooner who was formerly a prince. But it's so close, it's close enough to think that the artist formerly known as Prince is a direct quote from Moby Dick, like Peter Coffin. Well, thanks a lot for calling us in, Peter, just to talk about dirt. We're at 866-570-PEN, that's 7366. PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. Call in. This is my last day in New York. On the way over here, had two really great slices of pizza. You know, I don't ever feel like I can leave New York till I get that kind. And this pizza was so greasy, okay, that it went right through every napkin I had. And I was walking over here, my hands were covered with grease. And, you know, the corner vendors, the guys that have, like, the hot dogs and stuff, they hide their napkins. You can't grab them there. So walking this whole distance, people were coming up and going, "Hey, Penn, good luck on the new show. Good luck on Identity," and sticking their hands out. And I had to be like Howie Mandel or something, because I didn't want to say my hands are covered with, you know, with grease. It looked like, you know, I had, like, you know, lube on my hands, and I didn't want to have to explain that. So instead, I have to act like I'm. So anybody that saw me on the way walking over here to the studio, and I didn't shake your hands, it was because my hands were so greasy, and I was embarrassed about it. The funny thing is, I was embarrassed to talk about it in front of one person, but now on the radio, I'm very comfortable. But man, a good slice of pizza. I also want to tell the people in Vegas. Yesterday, we started the fourth annual Penn and Teller 13 Bloody Days of Christmas. 4 years ago, I went to donate blood. You donate blood, Rudy?
I used to.
You used to? It's the best thing you can do. You know, you're saving people's lives. And I went in there, and I went into the blood place, and they said that we had donated, Penn and Teller had donated one set of tickets, one pair of tickets to be raffled off among everybody that gave blood in Vegas. And I just said, and of course I didn't talk to the box office or the Rio or Teller or our press person. I didn't talk to anybody. I just said, there was a TV camera that came in. And I said, Penn and Teller will give 2 tickets to everyone that gives blood between now and Christmas. And it became huge. And the time, and I'm really proud of this. If you were to line up the stuff I'm proudest of in my life, this would be one of them. The time right before Christmas, which is the lowest blood donating time of the year, in Vegas, because of Penn and Teller doing that, is the highest blood donation time. And we get a lot of people who get to come to our show free, because locals in Vegas don't buy tickets to shows anyway. We want them to come to the show, tell their friends about it. So all the people that give blood, no raffle, no nothing, no jive. You just pour some blood out of you. We give you tickets to the show. So the 13 bloody days of Christmas started yesterday. Go into any UBS, United Blood Services Center in Vegas, and you get a voucher for 2 tickets to the Penn & Teller show now through December 29th. For the whole rest of the year, go in, give some blood, help people out, because you do a lot of good. Even if you're not in Vegas, even if you're in Chicago or one of the other places that have the show, give blood. It really is important. And while you're doing it, get blood, bone marrow typed. You bone marrow typed?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, get bone marrow typed. That's really cool, because then someone calls you up, and if you happen to match, it's a 1 in a million match. But if you do match, you save someone's life. If they didn't have you, they'd be dead. So you can walk into every room and go, I saved someone's life. What have you done? Screw you. This is Penn Jillette. We'll be back. We're on CBS Free FM. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette here on the Free FM, CBS Radio, my last day in New York City. 866-570-PENN, 7366. PennRadio at gmail.com, PennRadio.com. You know, I got up really early this morning to do the Today Show, and then I did like what I call a gangbang, but I guess they call it a roundup, is what they're supposed to call it, where you sit in a room. He just says he's not hearing me. You get me now? You get me now there, Jack? I just want to say this again. This is Penn Jillette, and I'm on the Free FM, CBS Radio, 866-570-PENN, 7366 is the phone number. If you want to call in, we're kind of talking about this article that was in the Daily Mail about children under 10 years old talking about what's the best thing in the world, just simply what's the best thing. They thought number one was being a celebrity, number two was good looks, number three was rich, and number 10 was God. So that's where the priorities of English children are, and it seems about right to me. I don't know. What do you expect? Literature to be number one with the kids? I don't know. And I also want to tell people that we're doing a United blood drive in Las Vegas. I want to do this too, Rudy, because I got up at 6 o'clock this morning, one of the Today Show, to pimp Identity Tonight. NBC is running promos of me. What's your identity? Running that promo a zillion times. And I also did this thing that and I call a gangbang, they call a roundup, where I sit on the phone and they call up like 20 radio stations. I do 10 minutes on all these local radio stations, just pimping the hell out of Identity. And if I were doing this show, and if I were on Identity, and if I and I weren't the same person, then definitely Penn Jillette would be calling in the show today to pimp his game show Identity. So I want to make sure that I take the time to pimp it tonight. After Deal or No Deal tonight on NBC, my show will debut, and it's called Identity. It's a game show. Big money, big action game show. One of the guests tonight is Eve Plum, as they try to guess her identity. And we're on from 9 to 10 tonight, and then we're on 8 to 9 Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But, of course, this does not mean that the Penn & Teller show is no longer happening. We start up again Saturday in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the Penn & Teller Theater, which we've just totally revamped. We cut off the whole front of the stage so that people can be up closer to us. We used to have this kind of thrust stage, but people on the sides, if we stood near the front, couldn't really see us. We pushed it back. We've made it a lot cooler. We put in a whole new front of the stage, and it should be cool. I haven't seen it, so I can't talk about it too much, but that's what's going on. We had this call, calls about the best thing to children, and let's talk to Tim. You there, Tim?
I'm here. How you doing?
Never better, boss. What's up?
Not much. Empty cardboard boxes.
But see, this is the problem with this. With dirt and with empty cardboard boxes, kids don't know they love that, right?
No, I agree.
Kids don't sit around going, boy, I wish I had some dirt and an empty cardboard box. It's just when they get an empty cardboard box, they know it's great. But celebrity is something they think is great, but once they got it, they would know sucks.
Exactly.
Yeah, 10-year-old kid. So it's, what we're really talking about is what kids think is the best, not what really is the best for kids. But I think you're absolutely right. Number one would definitely be dirt. Number two would be cardboard boxes, you know. And number three would be being sick. I think being sick for a kid, I've convinced myself now, is a good, fun thing if you're not seriously sick. Where are you calling from, Tim?
Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh, yeah, we haven't had a lot of people calling from Baltimore. How are things down in Baltimore?
They're gorgeous today. It's like 70 degrees.
Yeah, I know. It's stupid in New York, too. I walked over from the hotel to CBS. I walked over in just a shirt. No coat, nothing. That's where, you know, I think there's an upside to this global warming thing. I think there's a real upside to this global warming thing. I think it's okay. What else is going on in Baltimore?
Ravens doing quite well, 10-11-3 at this point.
Okay, you're talking a foreign language to me, but I'm sure other people care about that. That's football?
Yes.
Yes, good, thanks. And, you know, what I remember about Baltimore, besides a woman named Janet that I had a lot of fun with, we played there at, is it Center Stage that you have in Baltimore?
Yes.
Is that the theater that we played there right before Broadway, and it was terrific. And I also discovered Rockin' Bowl, which tells you an awful lot about how hip Baltimore is, that bowling is what I remember.
Yeah.
Well, that's Tim's comment is, yeah. So, cardboard
exactly.
Boxes.
Hey, okay. I hope your show does well on identity.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. Thank you so much, Tim.
Okay.
Thanks a lot,
bye.
Tim. We could have played identity with Tim. We could have tried to guess from his voice what Tim did for a living. You got any guesses on that, Rudy?
I was going to say carpet cleaner.
Carpet cleaner?
Yeah.
That's what we got. See, ain't no way to tell there. 866-570-PEN-7366. That's a good guess. PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. You know, one of the DJs I talked to this morning said that they were playing identity with me. They were trying to imagine that they didn't know what I did for a living, but they were just looking at the way I look, and they said they would think sound man for a second-rate rock act.
Second
rate. You see me being sound man for the Stones?
No, I see you being the head.
Sound, yeah, like for the Stones.
Right, you've been around.
Yeah. But boy, do I look like a sound man.
Yeah.
I mean, when I walk in, yeah, I just have that sound man. Look, see, Rudy, you have the same, you have the beard, you have the long hair. You are a sound man.
I am.
So it kind of makes you right.
That's a very good one.
Yeah. I'd be the king of roadies.
You'd be the king.
The absolute king of roadies. So everybody wants to call in, 866-570-PEN. That's 7366, PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. I haven't been to the website, Penn Radio, in a long while, but stop in there. We have all the music from the show, which is the great Mike Jones orchestra playing there. Had a lot of fun in New York. I saw Lou Reed play all of Berlin Thursday night in Brooklyn. Went out to Brooklyn, also had Junior's Cheesecake. And then had, what is it, Garibaldi's Pizza there right there in Brooklyn. It was fabulous. Then seeing Lou Reed and then hanging out with, like, you know, Hal Wilner and, you know, Russ Titelman, all the hipsters in New York coming out for Lou Reed. It was a fabulous evening. The only thing that was bad, of course, was that, at the Lou Reed show, Teller had better seats. So I'm sitting there looking at that bald spot on the back of his goddamn head going, wait a minute, I know Lou Reed better than you do. I played guitar with Lou. And there he is, the Teller's little thinning hair in the back of his head sitting there saying, well, I'm more in than you are now, Penn. So Teller had a much, much better in here. Let's take a phone call. Let's talk to Bill. What's up, Bill?
Hey, just listening to your program, enjoying it, and
thanks.
I was just wondering what your thoughts would be if they did that survey to children in a third world country. Top 10.
You don't think celebrity would be up there? You think maybe clean water would be there?
Well, I was thinking food.
Yeah.
clothing.
Yeah.
Bomb shelter.
You know, there was a great
government.
There was a great article in the New York Times. You know, Peter Singer, who was a big, you know, animal activist, animal rights guy, who I don't usually agree with, had a really beautiful article that kind of cut around all the Bono stuff about this 1% and government's giving the money, and talked about how we could donate money to third world countries. And what I worry about most, of course, is that the major problem in these third world countries is the dictators, is the bad government. It's very hard to get money to them. But, you know, there's a lot of kids suffering, and I think what we're going to find out, in like 4 or 5 years that Bill Gates, who's so smart and so cool, is going to have a really cool charity set up that we can feel like that there's no skimming being done and the stuff's really getting there and he's really smart. Because I would like nothing more than in 10 years for them to survey third world children under 10 and have them think that the number one thing, best thing in the world is being a celebrity. Man, when you put it that way, Bill, it's just so groovy because it really shows in England and the U.S. how fortunate and how healthy our kids are. That the number one thing they think of is being a celebrity.
Exactly.
It's pretty great.
I think that they need to be reminded how preferential they are in this world.
Well, you know, maybe the adults need to be reminded. Maybe the kids can just think that's the way life should be. And if we play all our cards right, that's the way life will be. You know, we can do that. And, of course, I mentioned this on the show probably too much, but Norman Borlaug, my hero, just got that big award. He saved a billion people from starvation. So the United States has shown that we can help a lot of people and can keep doing that. And maybe, you know, that's a really good thing to think about is that our kids are able to think about being celebrities and being good-looking. Good-looking is on the list because they got so much clean water and so much food, they can think about being good-looking. And they don't have to worry about God. They can think about being good-looking. That's a terrific thing, Bill. Thanks a lot for calling with that.
Great show. I love your show.
Thank you so much, Bill. Thanks. Let's take another call. We got Ray on the line.
Hello, Mr. Tell. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, sir. What's up, Ray?
Well, I just wanted to mention that my daughter's birthday was the 12th of this month. She just turned 11. And on the top of her list of things that she wanted for her birthday was a pair of scissors.
So she could run with them. She's a runner, then.
I figured it must be very important to her.
Yeah,
I didn't ask her why. I just gave her a pair of scissors.
Well, that was the 12th. So you've got a few days. What's she done with the scissors in those 6 days?
Absolutely. I'm from
Oklahoma. Absolutely is the right answer. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ray. Absolutely. What did she do with the scissors?
I wasn't listening to a thing you said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. tonight, my game show debuts. You know, NBC loves it. The critics have loved it. All the people there loved it. It tests very high. And if people don't watch it tonight, none of that means a good goddamn. The one thing about television that's so cool and radio that's so cool, it is completely 100% democratic. It does not matter how much money they put behind it. It doesn't matter how much they push it or they pimp it or how much they do. If people tune in to watch it, it stays on the air. If it does, it doesn't matter if people think Deal or No Deal is hip or not hip or how he's happening or not happening. As long as people tune in, that show will be there. So it's the same thing. NBC's trying to, you know, they did the Howie show, did the Saget show, now they're trying to Penn Jillette show. Identity tonight on NBC. And speaking of CBS, I'll be here tomorrow. There'll be a little bit of Monkey Tuesday. A little bit of Monkey Tuesday going on. Be a lot of other stuff. We'll have some guests in. Michael Goudeau will not be here tomorrow, but there will be me. So we'll take many more calls tomorrow. This whole week, I'm going to be back in Vegas. I'm going to be on the phones taking calls like crazy. This is Penn Jillette. It frightens me, the awful truth of how sweet life can be.